This is episode zero of our actual play D&D podcast, Tales from the Glassguarded World. I'm Mike, the DM, and this is our second attempt at recording an episode explaining the campaign setting. One of the players, you'll meet in a moment, suggested that we should re-record the introductory episode now that the players have a better grasp on the setting and how recording works. So you may have heard some of this stuff in a previous episode zero. If you'd like, you can skip ahead to episode one, and you can probably enjoy everything just fine without all this background material. But if you want some background on the campaign setting, here it is. But first, there are some people that we need to thank for their help in getting this started. I want to thank Jonathan for setting up the Facebook group that connected us, and Gamescape for providing our initial meeting place here in Tallahassee, Florida. My friend Nakia, also I'd like to thank him for some story planning advice, and most of all to Sarah Fox of the Adventure.exe podcast for a ton of invaluable audio advice. And you should all go listen to Adventure.exe. It's hilarious and well-produced, and it's a great actual play D&D podcast. Some things I would like to say up front. I'm an experienced DM, but I haven't run a game in about 11 years, and I had an idea for a campaign and thought I should give it a chance. I also thought I might as well try my hand at making a podcast while learning 5th edition D&D. Podcasting is something I had wanted to do for a while, and the podcast story arc will have three sections or seasons, so we'll have a beginning, a middle, and an end. The players might take this in a totally different direction than I expect, of course, so who knows if this is going to take a year or 5 years. Another way that this podcast will be different from most others is I don't intend to go easy on the characters. I'm not necessarily trying to kill them, though some NPCs will surely try to kill them. But none of the player characters have plot armor. This campaign starts off slow and gradually builds as the players figure out what's going on. In fact, the podcast is a bit slow for the first two or three episodes, and that's intentional. These characters are starting at first level. They're not prepared, either in terms of game mechanics or story, to head straight into epic world-changing adventure. So they start off small. Part of my DMing style is to drop small hints and bits of story, which gradually build until the puzzle starts to come together. This means it takes a while for the players and listeners to start to see the big picture. The good news is that there is a big picture to see. You can rest assured that the story is going somewhere. It's being written with the end in mind, rather than just the next episode. Before I get into explaining the campaign setting, I should let you know that you can find us on Twitter as @TFTGGW, which is short for Tales from the Glassguarded World, or on Facebook at facebook.com/TalesFromTheGlassGuardedWorld. That's all one word. facebook.com/TalesFromTheGlassGuardedWorld. The podcast feed is available at libsyn.com, that's libsyn.com/TFTGGW, libsyn.com/TFTGGW, and of course, you can just do a Google search and one of those things will show up. And in addition to the podcast hosted there, you can also find the player's guide that I created before we started the campaign as a PDF file. If you rate us on iTunes or Stitcher, it will help other listeners find the podcast, but we're not dependent on advertising or donations, so don't feel obliged to help us out with ratings or anything like that. We're going to keep going, even if no one ever reviews us, or worse yet, even if they don't like us. We're going to do this anyway. Or I am. I don't know about you guys.
Can't stop us.
Can't stop us. We're unstoppable.
Won't stop.
Let me describe the world just a little bit, and then I'll let the players add on some of their own understanding of the campaign setting. So the Glassguarded world is a bit strange. It is a flat world that is sealed inside some sort of big glass thing. There is a sun, but it's just a ring. It's a circular ring that is stationary in the sky, and it brightens and darkens to make a day and night cycle. Many people believe the world is gradually overheating, and there's some argument about why that is. Some people believe it has to do with the way wizards cast spells, and spells release surplus heat, and as a result of this overheating, some people believe the world is ultimately doomed. There are five primary nations or areas. One is Arrival, the original place where all the sentient species awoke in the middle of the world. It's an island. There's the Free Cities, which is a coalition of independent city-states. That is the southern part of the world. There is a north, south, east, and west, but It's not a globe. It is a flat, circular world. So to the south are the free cities. To the west is the magistracy run by the keepers of arcane knowledge. To the east is the Iron Empire, which is a, it's an empire. It's run by an emperor. There are a lot of orcs and half-orcs and humans and other people living there. It's generally thought not to be a terribly nice place. And then to the north is the Great Forest. And the Great Forest is home to a lot of elves and druids and rangers and half-elves and humans and other nature-type folks. Of these five regions, four of them have capital cities that are built around giant stone numbers that lie on the ground, facing up toward the sky. No one knows where the numbers came from. They were there when people first arrived and spread out from arrival to explore the world. The city of one, with a giant number one, is in the magistracy. The city of two is in the Great Forest. The city of three is in the Iron Empire, and the city of four is in the Free Cities. There's a map at the end of the campaign document that I mentioned earlier, which you can find on the Libsyn site for the podcast. Libsyn.com/TFTGGW. The next thing I think we ought to do is have the players introduce themselves, tell us a little bit about their characters, and they can tell us something about the campaign setting once they've all done that.
Hey, I'm Ashley. I play Tara Dane, who is a human fighter and a noble from the Land of Arrival.
My name is Andy, and I play Finn McCaspiner, the wizard gnome that is also from Arrival and the traveling companion for Tara Dane.
My name is Brian, and I'm playing Paxton, the human cleric. He's a pacifist who is kind of couch surfing around the free cities, healing people and farm animals and going wherever he's needed.
My name is Danielle. I play Athelflad. She's a rogue monk. Yeah, she's a lightfoot halfling.
We'll meet Athelflad later in the story. If you skip to episode one, you won't meet Athelflad right away, but you'll meet her eventually. But we don't want to say any more because we don't want to spoil anything.
Yep.
All right, so what do you guys want to add about the campaign setting?
Well, one of the things that we begin as a goal for the start of the story is that we're investigating a river that has broken to, is it the west side of the world? The river is pretty much stopped running for the most part. And so there are a lot of crop issues and things going on.
Right. And what's weird about the river? Most listeners are going to think of rivers as being these things that come out of mountains and flow downhill. And the rivers here are a little different. How?
They just burst out of the glass wall.
Right. Yeah.
And a beautiful waterfall, I assume, but...
Yes. Yeah.
If they're working.
If they're working. Yes. Otherwise, they spurt out in occasional unpleasant jets of...
Spoilers.
Yeah. Ooh, sorry.
So the river to the west, it used to be the God's River, which was the biggest river of the four, but it's recently, I don't know, within the past 50 years or so, broken, giving it the creative nickname, the Broken River.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Tara and I have come from Arrival to the city of Denton under the guise of business, but in actuality to study the Broken River to see if we can figure out what's happening.
Aside from the river, we do mention the Oculus, which we have the sun that is a ring. And in the middle of the ring is an opening where they say they used to see like an eye of someone looking down into the world. But now it just seems to be empty.
There's also stories of people seeing shadows move behind the wall. And there's even stories of observers who used to speak to beings or entities that were beyond the wall.
Which maybe makes this a good time to talk about observers.
Sure. So observers are people who appeared in important times, like great battles and things like that, and they wouldn't necessarily be part of the battles or the important event. They just kind of stand on the sideline and observe. And since they were always around whenever things went south, people started to think that they were kind of bad luck. And now observers don't really have a great reputation.
And they killed them.
Yeah, they're mostly extinct.
Yeah.
Right. Most people believe that there aren't any left. And they were known to sometimes, as Andy mentioned, kneel and go into a trance. And some people said that they were communicating with the gods or someone.
And I think it's part of the lore that they, observers, were known to have a gem somewhere on their body, right?
Right. Somewhere embedded in their body, usually in the visible in their skin somewhere, they would have a gem. What about the soul jar? Who wants to say something about that?
So in this glass world, there is what they call a soul jar. And every time a creature passes on, this gray mist believed to be the soul drifts toward that soul jar. And in the soul jar, it's believed that it's not exactly a paradise. Actually, it looks kind of uncomfortable.
Right.
A little miserable. So.
And the jar is this big glass container in the middle of the island city of Arrival. And it used to be possible to pick out individual souls, these gray misty shapes drifting around inside it. But now it's just a big gray blur, as many people have died and their souls have drifted to this jar.
And the world is only how old?
Like about 2,000 years old, mm-hmm. Right?
And it's commonplace in the culture that generally if you see like a gray mist, you'll get a word and you'll make sure that your loved ones are okay. Just seeing a simple gray mist fly through the field, you go right back home to make sure everyone's alive.
Right, right. And we determined that a creature had to achieve a certain level of sentience in order for it to have a soul that went into the jar. I don't know where the cutoff is, but I think we decided that amoebas don't qualify, but dogs and cats and cows and things like that do.
I think last time we decided that spider was our cutoff line.
Spider, okay, yeah. Right.
Spiders and below, no soul.
Okay. All right, good to know. Unless they're intelligent spiders.
Let's not run into those. Yeah.
Okay, anything else that you think is important?
Yeah, the magistracy.
Yes, so Finn's character was trained by the magistracy, the keepers of arcane knowledge, a group of wizards that run one of the basic nations or areas. What does that imply in terms of game mechanics for Finn?
So as a member of the magistracy, we are trained on how to use spells more effectively, because as you mentioned, many people consider that the excess heat and energy put out by magic is one of the issues with the world or with the heating of the world. So mechanic-wise, allowed one more spell slot per spell level, since I am more efficient with my magic, but at the same time, I use less magic and therefore take penalties to my regular spells. That being said, whenever I cast a spell, I take -2 to any damage, -1 to my spell difficulty, if there's a saving throw, and -1 to my spell attack modifiers. However, I also have the option of empowering my spells and augmenting them, costing 2 spell slots instead of 1, but costing +4 damage, increasing my spell difficulty challenge to +2, and then my spell attack modifier +2.
Excellent. And it is also worth noting that whenever you or any other magistracy-trained wizard cast a spell, there is much less heat released. It's a much more efficient form of casting. And you can tell by watching, that is, you, Finn, can tell by watching someone cast a spell whether they've been trained or not by the magistracy. Another note about rules while we're on the subject, I'll be rolling dice for the players sometimes, depending on what they're attempting. For example, if they're doing a perception check, I'll usually roll for them, because if they fail to spot something, the players shouldn't know that. They will roll attacks and other stuff, for which they would obviously know if they succeeded or failed. There will be a few other rules that are slightly tweaked, such as how magic item identification works and how long rests restore hit points, but I'll mostly be sticking to the standard rules. Sorry, Andy, back to what you were saying about Finn's training.
And having training is a point of contention in this world because the magistracy that exists out to the west has recently been expanding and having friction with the free cities while collecting any magic users under their wings so that they can be taught.
Right.
The quote-unquote correct way.
Right.
So the magistracy is kind of like just a big magic academy.
Yes, it's like a magic academy that is also part of a government that
like
is
a mageocracy.
Mageocracy. I was thinking theocracy, but I didn't know how to combine it. Yeah, yeah. So a mageocracy.
That's a word, right?
It is now.
It can.
Yeah. The Iron Empire is supposed to be the scary sounding place, but we really just seem to not like the magistracy. And we all can't say magistracy.
Yeah.
It's actually magistracy.
Yeah, it's kind of like caramel at this point. Everyone says it different.
So, important note for the listeners, the magistracy is also known as the keepers of arcane knowledge, so we may also just refer to them as the keepers because it's easier to say.
Right. The wizards are the keepers of arcane knowledge. The nation is the magistracy, which is confusing, I know, but oh well, sometimes the world's confusing. All right, anything else you guys want to mention?
So we talked a little bit about there being, or there used to be shadows outside of the glass walls, and you can maybe see a big eye in the gap of the sun. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
This might be a good time to mention that the cosmology of this world, there are no known named gods.
Right.
Which makes it break from, like, traditional D&D settings where there's lots of named gods and everything. Like, clerics don't necessarily pray to any specific god. They just pray to concepts and ideas.
Right. And they still receive spells.
Mm-hmm.
There is a cult with a named god.
That's true. Yes. The only one.
Dead cult.
That's right.
But
supposedly. We don't know that.
The cult follows Foresight, which is the only named god that was mentioned. And for the most part, the cult is no more.
Right. There are ruined buildings, temples, that sort of thing, but there don't seem to be any actual worshippers left anymore.
Is there a historical reason that we know for that, or did it just kind of dwindle out of existence?
You don't know the details. You know it did dwindle out of existence, but you don't know any specific details beyond that.
Okay.
Another departure from typical D&D settings is that since pretty much everyone who's in the world just kind of woke up there together, the regular racial relations aren't there. So dwarves are just dwarves and elves are just elves.
Yeah, and they get along okay. They all woke up in the same pile 2,000 years ago at the beginning of the world, and there weren't the same sort of separations that sometimes lead to racial animus in other campaign settings. Which is to say that it's not to say that there are no racists, but it's much less common. Most conflicts and disagreements have to do with different
ideologies
or conflicting interests or something like that.
Now, are goblins and hobgoblins an exception to that?
Right. So goblins and hobgoblins have always had trouble getting along with everyone else and bugbears as well. And as a result, they are treated differently from everyone else. They are not part of polite society. Whereas even orcs have managed to integrate themselves into the rest of civilization. Goblins, hobgoblins, and bugbears have not.
Owlbears are revered.
By these players anyway. Owlbears seem to be a favorite thing.
We will get them still.
We will create the second name god in the history of this episode.
I think that's enough for this episode. So that means that the next thing the listener should do, if you haven't already, is go ahead and move on to episode 1. And we hope you enjoy. Again, feel free to contact us on Twitter or Facebook, or you can even leave comments on our Libsyn episode posts and let us know if you have any questions or comments or anything like that. Thanks for listening. What you're hearing right now was recorded in September 2019, long after the rest of this introductory episode was recorded. So I now know that I should add a few more things. First, we end up using a lot of sound effects, and we get most of them from freesound.org. It's a great resource. We're going to put up a list of the sounds used and links to them on our website. Second, we have a website. You can find us at tftggw.com. There is character art and biographies, links to the episodes, maps, and other stuff. You can also find us on social media. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/TalesFromTheGlassGuardedWorld and on Twitter as @TFTGGW. Drop by and say hello. You can also email us at tftggw@gmail.com. Third, the audio on these early episodes is pretty good, but it gets better as I learn more about audio production. The music gets better too, particularly around episode 20. Give it a chance. Everything about this podcast improves over time. Thanks for listening. We hope to hear from you.